And welcome into the Anything Goes Wednesday edition of the Doug Russell Podcast, coming a little bit later than normal, and there's a couple of reasons for that. One of them is because Giannis Antetokounmpo met the media for the first time today since training camp began. We will play you some of his comments coming up in just a couple of minutes. Glean from it what you want, but at the end of the day, he has not signed his Supermax extension. And quite honestly, it doesn't sound like he's about to sign it anytime soon. So I hope I'm wrong on that, but we'll let you judge for yourself. As always, you can interact with us on our social medias. You can find us on both Twitter and Instagram, username at Doug Russell Pod. You can email the podcast at DougRussellPod@gmail.com. Search for the Doug Russell Podcast on Facebook and on YouTube. And of course, for all of everything that we do here on the show, you can very simply find us at DougRussellPod.com. You can download for free all of our episodes, all of our past episodes, and we would certainly encourage you to do that. I did want to reach out and say thank you to everyone who's been so kind over the last several days. I announced on Monday that while I'm still going to be doing this podcast, that has not changed at all, but I have joined the team over at iHeartRadio Milwaukee. I'll be used in a variety of roles, some of them on the air, some of them off the air. You can hear me on the game. You'll be able to hear me occasionally on Radio 1130 WISN. You'll be able to perhaps even hear me on one of the music stations from time to time as well. But I'm in the programming department. I'll be filling a lot of different roles, again, both on the air and off the air. It's a really challenging time for the radio industry. Jobs are being cut left and right from every company in America. And I'm fortunate to have landed at such a great place, such great people, such a great company. And again, I look forward to continuing on with this podcast as well. All right, we've got a little bit of a shortened edition of the show today. I want to jump right into it and just kind of play for you back to back to back to back the crux of what Giannis Antetokounmpo had to say earlier today.
You know, I know my agent Alex and John Horst and the Bucks ownership are focusing in about those discussions, and I'm just trying to focus in myself, how I can get better, how I can help my teammates be better, how can we be ready Saturday to play our first preseason game. I think the moves are been amazing. You know, we got Jrue Holiday in the team, great player. We got Torrey Craig, great player, Bobby Portis, Breen, all the guys we got, you know, they can help the team, they can defend, but like having Holiday on the team is big time. You know, he's a great leader, he's a great human being. He can defend, he can score the ball. He's going to bring that edge on this team that we need. I do what I love. What I love is playing basketball. What I love is improving. What I love is helping my teammates improve. What I love is winning games. And off the court, about agents and contracts, I'm not trying to focus on that. And not that I don't care about it. Obviously, I care about it. It's a very big decision my life, probably one of the biggest decisions I'm going to make. But I just let my agent to focus on that. And I'm going to focus in like getting ready on Saturday to play the first preseason game. I'm not playing to be second or third or fifth. Now I'm playing to be the best. My best obviously want to be at the end, the last team standing. But you got the steps to that. You know, there's never has been a team that you're going to go and just going to go to the championship and just get it easy. You got to work for it. You got to hurt to get it. Last year, we wasn't ourselves. What we showed in the bubble wasn't ourselves, and we wasn't even close to what we can do. Going into the season, our main focus, obviously, is the championship. But before even that, we got to get better as a unit. We got to create good habits. We got to be the toughest, the nastiest, the team that plays together. Nobody wants to win a championship more than me. I can guarantee you that. It's not on my mind. What's on my mind is playing basketball and improving every day. And that's what's going to be always on my mind. And that's what I've been doing since day one, and it's never going to change. I can guarantee you that. Year 8 or year 25, it's not going to change. Obviously, it's a big decision, as I said earlier, but I just try to focus on what I can do. This is not in my hands. The discussion is between my agent, John Horst, the Bucks ownership, and they're taking care of that. You're the guys asking me these questions all the time, so you guys put it back on my mind. But as I said, they're going to handle those discussions. I'm going to handle what I got to do on the court, and everything's going to be good. I'm just going to focus in basketball. I know this is really, really big, the city of Milwaukee, and for the NBA world and the media world and all that. But, you know, I've been a private person. Whenever you guys decide something or I sign a contract, you guys probably going to know before I know. So, yeah, I'll appreciate that from now on. We try not to talk as much about that. We just focus on basketball.
Bucks superstar Giannis Antetokounmpo earlier today. The one thing that I will challenge him on, and I think that everyone should challenge him on, is when he says, it's not in my hands. whether or not. That decision's out of my hands as to whether or not I sign. No, it's not. It literally is in your hands. All those pens that you got from your teammates on your birthday on, what, Sunday? Those are the pens that you can use in your hands to sign a Supermax extension if you do want to remain in Milwaukee. Obviously, I think everyone here in Wisconsin, if you're a Bucks fan, certainly you want Giannis Antetokounmpo to stay here. I think that's been the assumption all along, but there are a couple of things that I gleaned from it, and one of them was that while he appreciates the Bucks upgrading some pieces to the roster, the way the Bogdanovich situation kind of blew up in the Bucks' face very publicly, very embarrassingly, that didn't sit well with him. And I didn't think that it would. I think that that was certainly an unforced error on the part of the Bucks front office to allow that trade to leak. And again, this is the same Bucks front office that, to my best recollection, is the only one in NBA history that's ever been fined for tampering with their own player. If there's been another team that's done that, I can't swear to it one way or the other, but that's kind of the feeling that I get. All right, moving along, and certainly there will be much more to say about Giannis Antetokounmpo as time goes on. We do have a little bit of an abbreviated show today, so I guess I apologize for that. But again, it's an Anything Goes Wednesday, so the one thing that I think most of us were kind of waiting on was some news or something from number 34. And now that we've at least heard from him, I mean, he couldn't duck the media forever. I think that that's kind of what his hope was, his intention was, because if you read his body language, that was the last place that he wanted to be. But, you know, at some point, the fans had to hear from their superstar. And I hope he stays in Milwaukee. I don't feel as good about it as I did a week ago. But again, there's a lot that can change between now and when he potentially could wind up leaving as a free agent, or if the Bucks don't feel like they were going to get anything in return, they could trade him. I hope they don't. I would say, look, you've got this back-to-back two-time NBA MVP. You roll the dice, and you're not going to win a championship without him. You might win one with him, but you're not going to win one without him. The Milwaukee Brewers in 1982, they would not have gotten to the World Series if it weren't for the leadership. Now, look, Robin Yount was the MVP that season. Pete Vukovich was your Cy Young Award winner that season. Paul Molitor was the best leadoff hitter in baseball that season. There were some great leadoff hitters, man, in that era. Ricky Henderson, Willie Wilson, some great leadoff hitters, but none had the success at the plate that Paul Molitor did. But the leadership on this team, and I've talked to Jerry Augustine about this on a couple of occasions, and he was in that clubhouse. And when things weren't going well in the early part of the season, I mean, this was a ball club that wound up winning the pennant under an interim manager after Buck Rogers got fired in early June. And there was one guy who kind of put this team together. He was their glue guy, but he was also someone who came in and had a hell of a season in 1982 as well. I mean, this was a guy who, you know, you look at his overall batting average in 1982, it was only .269. This was a guy who hit 23 home runs, drove in 97 runs, which was outstanding. Wasn't even an all-star in 1982, should have been an all-star in 1982, did make it in 1983. But 1 year ago today, and this was so long overdue, but it was 1 year ago today that Ted Simmons finally got into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Again, like I said, long overdue. But if you look at Ted Simmons' numbers, if you look at his offensive statistics and put his numbers up against the greatest catcher of all time by everyone's measure and a contemporary of Ted Simmons, if you put blindly his numbers up against Johnny Bench's, with the exception of home runs, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. And look, I mean, Ted Simmons was somebody who, over the course of his career, still hit 248 home runs. That's nothing to sneeze at from a catcher. This is a guy who played 21 seasons in the major leagues. He broke in with the St. Louis Cardinals when he was just 18 years old. But again, his statistics, 248 home runs, drove in 1,389 runs over the course of his career. His career batting average, a very, very respectable 285. I mean, this is a guy who, again, didn't get the publicity because he didn't play on the big red machine. This was a guy who didn't get the publicity because when he played for the Cardinals in the early 70s, they were kind of in between eras. The Cardinals got to a couple of World Series, obviously, in the 1980s, one of them being, ironically enough, against the Brewers. They got to the World Series a couple of times in the 1970s with Bob Gibson on some of those great St. Louis Cardinals teams with Lou Brock on it. And certainly Ted Simmons was a teammate of Lou Brock's, but they never really got back to that quote-unquote promised land, if you will. Fast forward to December of 1980. That's when Ted Simmons, along with Pete Vukovic and Raleigh Fingers, they get traded to the Brewers in arguably the greatest trade in Wisconsin sports history. The only one that I think could hold a candle to it, honestly, is the trade that brought Brett Favre to Green Bay for first-round draft pick that wound up being a stiff running back named Tony Smith who only got about 500 career yards. But what this did for the Brewers, this trade, is now, yes, they had to say goodbye to a couple of guys that they didn't necessarily want to have to part with, but it was only Larry Sorensen and Sixto Lascano. But the big chip in this one was a prospect by the name of David Green. And David Green was supposed to be just baseball's next Triple Crown winner. He was supposed to be an absolute stud. And instead, what the Brewers got back were what wound up to be, you know, two Hall of Famers, two guys that won Cy Young Awards, and one guy who won an MVP award. That was an incredible trade that turned around the Milwaukee Brewers franchise and set them up for success in the early 1980s. But again, the glue guy that held it all together was the catcher, Ted Simmons. Although he never won an MVP award, he never won a Cy Young Award, obviously. But last year, again, 365 days ago, he was finally told that he was going to baseball's Hall of Fame. I was fortunate enough to have Ted Simmons on my radio program at the time, and I wanted to bring you that conversation 1 year later. We welcome in the great Ted Simmons to the Doug Russell Show. How's that sound, Ted? Hall of Famer Ted Simmons.
That sounds pretty cool. I mean, it sounds really pretty cool. You think about that sort of thing for a lot, a very large part of your life, and you wonder about it. And then when it finally happens, it's pretty cool. It's only been 2 days, 48 hours worth, but I like it so far.
How did you find out that the Veterans Committee voted you in?
Well, you sit and you wait. The 10 finalists are notified about a week or 10 days ahead of time, and they tell you when the vote will be taken, okay? And so they say between, 4 and 5 o'clock, in this case, Pacific time, you'll get a phone call or you won't. And I've been through this now 4 times, and I finally got lucky. But the three previous times, I sat and waited for that phone, like the other, guys did along with me this past week. And you sit there and you wait and you pray and you beg and you do everything. Okay? And then I finally got the phone call. And I mean, it's just like, it's like water going over Niagara Falls. The weight of the world is lifted completely off you. And I mean, it's like that. I mean, I'm not going over Niagara Falls, but I thought I was the other night when I got that phone call.
I'm going to challenge you on one thing. You said that you were lucky to get that call, and I will challenge that because I was asked a few years ago why you weren't a Hall of Famer, and I didn't really have a good answer. And I think it's mostly instructive for me to compare players against their contemporaries. And I'm not knocking Johnny Bench at all, but he was the best catcher of your generation. But I looked at your numbers against his. You had more hits, more doubles, more RBIs, more games caught, half as many strikeouts, and a higher batting average than Johnny Bench did.
Well, we were different. Some people like blondes. Some people like brunettes. We were different. And so it was, everything that happened to John, he earned and he deserved. And he found himself in the wonderful position to play in postseason with that big red machine in front of everybody who loved and watched the World Series baseball games. in that period where he was great. And he, under the microscope, he produced, and he was under the microscope a lot, and people knew him. But he approached the game offensively, you know, home run focused. And, you know, he, you know, was very, very dangerous in, you know, a situation where a home run could either tie you or beat you. And every time he got to the plate, you were concerned that he might homer right now. I was a different kind of threat. Yeah, I had power, and I switched hit, and I could hurt you, and I could win a game with a home run. But, you know, I won a whole lot more games in my career with two out base hits with man on third base only, or man on second and third, or second base only, when getting one hit right now is a really tough thing to do. And all I can say is what people finally saw and realized about my career and ultimately, you know, saw value enough to elect me into the Hall of Fame, they saw a different player than Johnny Banks. And like I say, some people like blondes and some people like brunettes. And that's how I, you know, explain that. And like I say, he was in the World Series every year. I was watching the World Series, not playing in it. He was hitting homers in the World Series. I wasn't doing anything in the World Series. So the numbers are something you look at and reflect upon when you have time to sit down and study and compare, okay? And God, today it's done all the time. You know, people today compare players in the 1930s to players in the 1990s. And statistically, they can break it all down and bogey everything in such a way that says, you know, this guy is probably about the same kind of player as such and such back in 1934. So it's essentially how, you know, my, you know, Hall of Fame candidacy evolved and then finally, you know, surfaced.
Some guys like blondes, some guys like brunettes. I like that line.
Bench is a pretty good player.
Yeah, like I said, it wasn't a knock on Johnny. Johnny was great. He was fantastic.
I know. What's happened here is people have finally realized that, well, maybe I wasn't so bad, you know, along with him. You know?
Yeah, that's putting it mildly. Take me back to the winter between the 1980 and 1981 seasons. You're traded along with Pete Vukovic and Raleigh Fingers to the Brewers. What was your reaction initially to getting dealt away to another city after 13 years in St. Louis?
Only thing I wanted to know at that time was the truth. And I asked Whitey Herzog to his face, who had arranged for this deal with Milwaukee. I asked him one thing that I wanted to be certain of. I said, is Fingers in the deal? And is Vukovic in the deal if I say yes? And I could control the outcome because I was a 10-5 player at that time. And so I knew Milwaukee's club. I could see that they could really use a nice starting pitcher, i.e. Vukovic. I could see anybody in the world who could use the kind of closer Fingers was. And I realized they didn't have a everyday, you know, 140 game of season type catcher who could contribute offensively to a club that was an offensive monster already. So I said, if Fingers is in the deal and Vukovic is in the deal and they're going to Milwaukee with me as a 10-5 player, I said, let's go. That's all I wanted to know. And when they said those two were going, I'm going too, because the three of us could impact that team. And we obviously did impact that team. And, you know, when we all got there, Molly and Robin and Cooper and Ogilvy and Gorman and Charlie Moore and the rest of it, man, it was fun. It was real fun.
Baseball Hall of Famer Ted Simmons joining us here on the Doug Russell Show on 94.5 ESPN. I asked Jerry Augustine this years ago, and I didn't know what his answer was going to be. I wasn't leading him anywhere, but I just was curious what the difference was between the Brewers teams that became good in the late 70s and the ones that made the playoffs in the early 80s after that trade that we were just talking about. And without hesitation, he said that you were the difference What do you remember about that team that you came into, and specifically what you provided them that wasn't already there?
What I had the experience of a career in St. Louis where I'd established myself and had already, you know, accomplished a lot. But the one thing I will say, and it's always been true, I mean, the Cardinals play a certain way. And the expectation over there is always the same. It's been there since Boyer came, Gibson, Brock, all of them over there played winning baseball. And I say, what is that? What? Everybody talks about winning baseball. Winning baseball is centered around one thing. You sacrifice yourself for the benefit of everyone. To the extent that even in the modern day of analytics, when a guy doubles in the bottom of the ninth and he's the home team and he represents the winning run at second base and nobody's out, that next batter does not have to sacrifice bunt. But he has to make every effort to get that man over by hitting the ground ball to the right side. Now, that's called ABC baseball. A, for the leadoff double. B, for the ground ball to the right side. C, for the sacrifice fly that enables you to win the game without another hit. And when I say the Cardinals demand that from every Cardinal that comes through their minor leagues, every one of them, the pressure is great. And if you don't play that way, if you are unwilling to play that way, you won't play in Cardinal red uniform. And what I brought was that emphasis. This is ABC, boys. Real simple. Lead off double, get him over the ground to the right side, sack, fly, we win. And when you're around talented people like Milwaukee was loaded with, all you got to do is say, hey, we're all going to do this together. And this is how we do it together. And everybody gets it. And everybody gets on the truck. And pretty soon that truck is steamrolling everybody. And that's what Augie was talking about that they saw when I came. That's all I brought.
How much did you think about the irony of the World Series in 1982 then, considering what you came from in St. Louis? Just 2 years later, you're playing against them in the Fall Classic.
Most insane thing I've had to endure in my life. Bobby Forrest was the pitcher for St. Louis. I homered off him that night. Next morning, his daughter and my son carpooled together, going to the same school. And just crazy stuff like that. I mean, you know, it was the craziest thing I've ever had to go through. And, God, we had them. But, you know, you send Vukovich out there with a absolutely blown rotator cuff, throwing half his normal velocity, and still got through six innings with a 3-1 lead and fingers down for the whole month. We still went to the seventh game. And at the bottom of the sixth, I thought we were going to win. You know, guy said, "What's the greatest moment in your life as a player?" I said, "Sixth inning, St. Louis, game seven, up 3-1. Game seven, I thought we were going to win."
Wow.
And it's the best moment in my whole life. I've done a lot of really neat things. Had a lot of really nice highs playing baseball my whole life since I was a little boy. I had a lot of really neat things happen playing baseball. Best thing that ever happened to me is that feeling I had in the sixth inning of Game 7 in St. Louis, Brewers, Cardinals. I thought we were going to win. And there was nothing like it. There was no feeling on earth better for that fleeting moment. I felt it getting away, and I tried as hard as I could to grab it back. Just couldn't. Couldn't get it back. But it was the best thing ever had happened to me in my life as a Major League Baseball player. I thought we had them.
All right, from 1 year ago, Ted Simmons. Of course, we didn't know that there wasn't going to be a Hall of Fame ceremony in Cooperstown. That obviously was wiped out because of the pandemic. So he will be honored this coming summer with the class of 2021. But so well deserved for Ted Simmons, somebody who waited a long, long time to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. You know how to find us on Facebook and on Twitter. That is searching for the Doug Russell Podcast on Facebook, on Twitter, and Instagram, username at Doug Russell Pod. And you can always drop us an email, DougRussellPod@gmail.com. And our website, which has all of our episodes that you can download for free, as well as links to everything that I just gave you, our Instagram page, Twitter page, email, very simply, DougRussellPod.com. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the show. Have a great rest of your week. We'll talk to you Friday right here on the Doug Russell Podcast. Have a good one.